That was a portion of Congresswoman Ilhan Omar's speech delivered in 2019 at the annual Valley Banquet hosted by the Council on American Islamic Relations, California. You've been listening to Arab Voices, originating on KPFT Houston and syndicated on other radio stations in different cities in the U.S. and Europe. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio's fundraising drive for 2022 was a tremendous success. Thanks to our listeners, our goal of $70,000 was exceeded. Stitching communities together brought folks together for the love of independent media. The beloved KBOO community extends gratitude to our members, supporters, staff, and board. And a big thank you to our volunteer programmers. Your on-air support was the backbone of this membership drive. Tax receipts are available. Please send your request to membership@kboo.fm. Since 1968, KBOO has relied on members to support grassroots broadcasting. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Cory Doctorow, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Policy for the People, a show that explores the public policies that can lift up all Oregonians. This show is a collaboration between KMUZ Radio and the Oregon Center for Public Policy. I am your host, Juan Carlos Ordóñez. Every dollar that the Oregon legislature spends subsidizing corporations is a dollar they could have gone to fund schools, build affordable housing, or fund other services that Oregonians count on. And right now, one of the big topics of discussion in Salem is whether to provide new subsidies for semiconductor companies like Intel. This push for new subsidies stems from the congressional enactment of the CHIPS Act, by which the federal government has pledged tens of billions of dollars to ramp up semiconductor manufacturing in the U.S. Understandably, Oregon lawmakers are eager to see some of that money flow to our state. But are corporate subsidies worth it? Do business incentives actually accomplish what state and local governments hope to achieve? And what should Oregon lawmakers do in response to the semiconductor industry's current call for new state subsidies? In this episode of Policy for the People, we explore these questions with our two guests. In the second half of the show, I speak with John Calhoun, a volunteer with Tax Fairness Oregon, who has been following closely the discussions taking place at the state capitol. But first, we hear from Greg Leroy, executive director at Good Jobs First, a nonprofit research organization based in Washington, D.C., that focuses on improving economic development policies. Good Jobs First is the nation's leading organization tracking the use of state and local economic development subsidies. Here's my conversation with Greg Leroy. Greg, let's begin by defining a term: corporate subsidies. What are corporate subsidies and what kind of forms do these take?
Sure. So you hear the words economic development incentives or business incentives or corporate subsidies or corporate welfare, perhaps, but they all boil down to this. Companies, sort of like families, pay three main kinds of taxes. They pay income taxes on their profits, they pay sales tax on the stuff they buy, and they pay property tax on the stuff they own. And in the name of economic development, many of those taxes, sometimes they go away forever. Sometimes they get deeply discounted or even rebated to the companies. Perhaps $90 or $95 billion a year, states and cities spend this way. that number's been going up over time, and it's really a ruinous kind of race to the bottom because it really harms public services.
What would you say are the main problems associated with corporate subsidies?
You know, at the front end, the process is a problem, right? Because companies insist on states and cities signing non-disclosure agreements so that the identity of the company, even in the later stages of negotiations or even right up to the vote legally authorizing the subsidies, that the identity of the company is sometimes not known. You know, is it a polluter? Is it a discriminator? Is it a union buster? Nobody can tell. And then over time, a lot of these subsidy deals don't get effectively monitored. They don't have enough safeguards built in to make sure that the company gets a haircut, gets a clawback, or, you know, money back guarantee language if the company falls short. They're not being actively monitored to make sure they create as many jobs as they said, or as good a jobs in terms of wages and benefits. And at budget time, a lot of the deals are structured in ways that can't be subject to future oversight or negotiation by state legislatures because they're basically wired into the tax code. So from beginning to end, the system makes it really easy for companies to kind of slide through and get these big subsidies with much less oversight than other kinds of public expenditures.
There are studies out there that have looked into the effectiveness of these business incentives. And the main takeaway of a lot of these reports is that these are often ineffective or worse, wasteful of public dollars. What is your understanding of the effectiveness of these kinds of subsidies?
This is really the big dirty secret in the economic development space. And that is that incentives almost never determine where companies chose to expand or relocate, because in the big scheme of things, they're too small. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, given what I'm saying about how expensive some of these subsidy deals are. But here's the math. All state and local taxes combined, as a piece of that pie chart of the average company's cost structure in America, they all add up to 1.8%, which is to say 98.2% of the average company's cost structure in America are not state and local taxes. They are labor and occupancy and raw materials and logistics and energy and transportation and CEO bonuses and lots of other things that aren't going to be affected if the company gets a tax break. So tiny variations in those big cost variables dwarf anything you can really do with the tax code. But the system is rigged in a way that allows companies to pre-decide, in many cases, where they want to go based on those business basics, but then play states against each other to get subsidies from the place that they already have decided has the best business basics. But now the location is giving up a bunch of its tax revenue, which is going to hurt its school system and its infrastructure and its public health and safety systems, to get the company that it would have gotten anyway.
Is there any evidence that you've seen in terms of the impact of these business incentives and corporate subsidies on income inequality, whether it's exacerbating income inequality as well as racial inequality?
Yes. The consistent finding is that if you compare places that use a lot of subsidies or not very many subsidies, the places that use subsidies the most have higher degrees of inequality. And because we have racialized inequality in the United States, that translates to racial inequality as well.
So I know that Good Jobs First tracks corporate subsidies all across the country. And I'm wondering if you've seen cases happening in Oregon that really jump out at you in terms of the amounts involved or other factors.
Sure. So, you know, the cloud computing data center business, this is a space in which Amazon is the world's biggest provider of cloud computing data centers, but Google, Microsoft, Facebook, Apple run data centers. And there a recent devastating series there in Oregon Live detailed the ill effects of the concentration of data centers that you have in some counties there. So if you ask yourself, where do data centers like to go? The answer is places with cheap electricity, because they use a lot of it. It's their biggest operating expense. And also places with water, because they need them to cool the facilities. That's why Oregon, with your cheap hydropower and your plentiful water, had already originally attracted a lot of data centers. You had the business basics and didn't need to massively subsidize them.
Do you think that subsidizing corporate activities can be productive? In other words, are there situations when it is worth it for a state or local government to offer corporate subsidies? And how should those be structured? What would a good use of business incentives look like?
Juan Carlos, thanks for asking. That it's really an important question. And we do think there is a role for government in achieving a more equitable economy and addressing racialized poverty patterns and injustices of the past. And that's where incentives could be playing a positive role. So, for example, we could be using subsidies to fix past injustices like redlining and other things that have made development unfair and unjust and racist in the past. We could be bringing grocery stores to food deserts. We could be bringing affordable housing to cities that are having crises with affordability. So there are places, but it's not giving Intel and Micron billions of dollars for individual facilities.
Speaking of semiconductor companies, last year, Congress enacted the CHIPS Act, by which the federal government will spend tens of billions of dollars to incentivize the manufacturing of semiconductors here in the U.S. And as I understand it, to receive some of this federal money, a corporation has to show that the state where the company plans to expand manufacturing has invested in the semiconductor sector. And I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on the CHIPS Act and what have you seen so far in terms of states jumping into this fray with offers of subsidies?
So good, great question. Let's remind ourselves why the federal government is suddenly showing some industrial policy muscle. So the issue now is Taiwan, right? And the fact that 90% of the world's high-end semiconductors are made in one place, which is at grave risk of being invaded by China. And hence the scramble to increase stateside capacity to make high-end chips to insulate us from the political risk of a Taiwanese invasion. That's the impetus for the original bill. We don't like the fact that the bill says there has to be state and local incentives. The bill is, and we're poring over the fine print right now and querying federal staff, it doesn't say any specific amount of subsidization. So I think it could be a very minimal amount of subsidization. And don't forget that most states have automatic subsidies that would automatically subsidize any kind of big chip activity like this. So we want to downplay that. We want the jobs to be spread around. We should certainly be targeting places that need jobs the most, places that have the most injustice and the most previous disinvestment. We should be having community benefits agreements tied to these projects for local hiring preferences, for good permanent job career ladders. These could be real engines for equality if we do it right.
What would be your recommendations to Oregon lawmakers as to how to approach this potential opportunity offered by the CHIPS Act?
Given the existence of the Silicon Forest there, we know that Oregon already has the business basics. So it's a sure bet that Oregon is going to be a competitive place for siting of some of these new facilities. Doesn't mean it's a lock, but it means you're on the short list probably already because you've got ingredients, including engineering talent, as well as other ingredients that have made for a successful microchip industry in the past there. My advice to the lawmakers would be to cut the amount of subsidies that the state is offering as low as possible and put as many strings on them as possible. Play to your strengths, which are the business basics. Leverage the power you have with your state incentives to say anybody locating here is going to hire locally. The facility is going to get built union with a diverse workforce. It's going to recruit a diverse workforce. It's going to have career ladders for a diverse workforce. That would be a terrific thing to do.
You said that Oregon should play to its strengths. What would it look like for Oregon to play to its strengths?
So in economic development, there's a school of thought called the cluster strategy, which is to say it's the opposite of these mega deals. I should have added, eight times last year, companies got incentive packages worth more than $1 billion for a single factory. That's the mega deal school of economic development. And we think it's just incredibly risky to put that many eggs in so few baskets. The opposite philosophy is called clusters, where you say, okay, we want to attract a promising industry, could be semiconductors. And to do that, we're going to invest in our public systems that make this a great place to grow semiconductor companies. We're going to invest in our computer sciences, engineering graduate programs. We're going to have a great customized training program. We're going to make sure that our high schools have and middle schools have great STEM programs for all the kids in public schools. We're going to certainly make sure that our utilities can deliver electricity and water and things like that. The theory here is that you might get three or six young companies, especially young promising companies or medium-sized companies, and you make Oregon a sticky place for them to operate. The value proposition of being in Oregon is high because you've got the public systems to meet the inputs that the company needs, but you're not putting $1 billion in a single corporate basket.
Greg, are there any points regarding corporate subsidies or the CHIPS Act that we haven't covered yet that you want to leave with us?
I think your legislators making these decisions should realize that they're making decisions that will shape the state for decades. If you keep putting lots of eggs in Amazon's web services basket and data center baskets, or other very lopsided, risky deals like that, and allow your public systems to be harmed because you're giving up so much public revenue that could be used to make the place sticky for promising future companies, you're going to make the state less prosperous. You're going to make the state more unequal, less prosperous, and less competitive in the long run. And pay attention to the 98.2% of the cost structure of companies that can benefit from great schools, great infrastructure, great public health, great public safety, and invest in those systems.
Well, Greg LeRoy, thank you very much.
Thanks, Juan Carlos. Great to be with you.
That was Greg LeRoy of Good Jobs First, discussing the risks associated with business incentives. We now hear from John Calhoun, a volunteer with Tax Fairness Oregon. Tax Fairness Oregon is an organization made up of volunteers that for 20 years has been fighting for a more equitable tax system in Oregon. Here's my conversation with John Calhoun. So, John, in response to the Federal CHIPS Act, the Oregon legislature is mulling over giving new subsidies to semiconductor manufacturers. Before we get into the substance of the topic, I want to ask about your background. You worked for years in the semiconductor industry. Is that right?
That is correct. I joined Intel in 1972 when there were only a few hundred employees. And I stayed there until 1991, so it was 19 years, working primarily on the financial side of the business.
Can you tell us, where do things stand right now in Salem in terms of the discussion as to whether to give new subsidies to the semiconductor industry?
This all started about a year ago when Intel announced that it was going to locate its next round of manufacturing plants in Ohio. And so all the politicians and press said, campaigned on who lost Intel. Well, Oregon didn't own Intel, and we are the largest site for Intel Corporation in terms of number of employees. But what it did is forced a number of people to say, we need to do things to attract companies so we won't lose out in the future. And one of the biggest problems we have right now is partly because of our land use planning laws and urban growth boundaries, we do not have a ready supply of manufacturing sites that are the size needed for these major efforts. That was an issue. Then the companies or states like Ohio and New York were offering major subsidies, at least $2 billion each to one company. There was nothing like that in the economic development arm of the state of Oregon. So a task force was gathered and they worked on putting together a study for a Oregon Semiconductor Competitiveness Task Force that published their results in August and laid the groundwork for legislative requests that the legislature is now reviewing. In that mode, the legislature set up a joint committee between the Senate and the House, that is the Committee on Semiconductors. And so they've been having background hearings to understand the issues better and to look at various ways that the legislature should act to provide ways to recruit some of these companies so that Oregon would get some portion of those federal dollars that came in the CHIPS Act.
And what kind of proposals are being discussed? What kinds of incentives are on the table, if you will?
So one is to provide a stronger academic university research effort dealing with semiconductor technology as a way to keep technical support and nationally ranked experts in the technology here in Oregon. That doesn't happen for free. So there's talk about how much money should the state invest in research programs, and we're talking in the tens of millions to $100 million range of investment. Next, they need to worry about having support for the workforce, so training for the technical workers, not so much at the PhD level, but at the technician level in community colleges. Then they talked about taxes, and the task force, this is the industry task force, came up with multiple ways that they would like the state to spend money on the industry and provide tax breaks for the industry. The one that has gotten the most attention is an R&D tax credit.
And R&D stands for research and development.
Yes, research and development tax credit. And this has been around at the federal level. We had one in the state for a while, and it was terminated a few years ago. And we can come back and talk about why it was terminated. This provides dollars, tax credits, if you will, to the companies that are growing their research efforts. And then there's another effort to resolve the industrial land issue. And it's not just a zoning issue where we say, okay, we're willing to move the urban growth boundary out in Washington County to include some new land, but then you have to spend tax dollars to develop it if it's going to be shovel ready to put a new semiconductor plant there.
About the research and development tax credit that Oregon used to have, why did Oregon let that tax credit expire a few years back?
Tax credits have to be reviewed every 6 years. And the R&D tax credit was up for review. And the state was spending about $20 million per session for a two-year period. What this amounted to was about 0.1% of the R&D that was being spent in Oregon businesses in a single year. If the incentive is small enough, everybody ignores it. It doesn't change behavior. There was not enough money to any one company that they would hire additional people or move their technical labs from another state to Oregon through this R&D. And the defining moment of the hearings was when a legislator asked the sole industry person to speak at the hearing, would you spend any more or any less on R&D if we removed this tax credit, if we ended the R&D tax credit? And the answer was no, we wouldn't change what we do. So why would we continue to spend that $20 million that could be spent on schools or housing or whatever? So we ended it.
In addition to industry calls for a new research and development tax credit, one of the ideas being pushed there are to expand the scope of subsidies, not just to semiconductor manufacturers, but all manufacturers. Is this in fact what some are proposing? And what are your thoughts on that idea?
Yes, the largest business organization, the Oregon Business and Industry, wants to have an industry-wide R&D tax credit so that it doesn't matter what your business is, if you're doing R&D, you should get the same incentives as the semiconductor industry. The problem with that is we don't have that much money that we can use for economic development here. And everything that goes to companies that are not semiconductor companies means there's less for them. And we have a very specific goal in this situation as to how do we recruit semiconductor manufacturing and research centers into Oregon in the next couple of years while this CHIPS Act money is available. So Tax Fairness Oregon is very much against an R&D industry-wide tax credit under the guise of recruiting semiconductor companies.
What else is Tax Fairness Oregon recommending to the legislature in terms of how to approach this issue of investments in the semiconductor industry and the opportunities created by the CHIPS Act?
One is the land banking. We're at this point where people want to locate manufacturing plants. There's no space left. So we're urging them to try to find the land. And if you have to change the urban growth boundary, you change it, but then you reserve it for the big manufacturing plants and not, if you will, use it up with many smaller projects. And especially low employment density projects like data centers, where they might, in 20 acres, only have 50 employees. On the tax credit side, we urge the legislators to, instead of spreading of the R&D tax credit, keep it concentrated, keep those dollars concentrated. And in fact, we prefer that the whole $200 million that the governor's talking about and whatever number the legislature can cut out of their budget be given to Business Oregon, which is the economic development arm of the state. And then they can use that money for loans, forgivable loans or grants, but actual dollars to help recruit the companies. And in that process, the company in Business Oregon can decide what is the best way to spend those dollars to make it more meaningful to that specific company to that they would then want to locate in Oregon.
Do you think that some of that money should go to something that you touched on earlier, investments in higher education, community colleges, the kinds of things that would create a more fertile ground to attract semiconductor companies?
Sure. And that's exactly the point. They're talking about giving the academic world grants to hire people. And whether that's on top of the $200 million or in addition to the $200 million is what this committee needs to sort out within the budget that the legislature will have to live with.
Any final thoughts you want to share with us regarding the issue of Oregon subsidizing semiconductor companies and the opportunity created by the CHIPS Act?
One thing that I think is important for everybody to understand is that even though we're talking about how many new dollars we can hand out, Oregon already has developed over the years incentive programs that make us very competitive. We have a program that allows the semiconductor industry to put in plants in that cost billions of dollars, and they don't have to pay property tax on those billions of dollars. We also changed the income tax law about 20 years ago at Intel's request, and so they don't pay much of an income tax. And then the last thing that everybody tends to forget about is that we don't have a sales tax, and therefore the equipment that the semiconductor companies buy to put in their plants, they don't have to pay a sales tax. So if you're going to spend $10 billion on a new plant, that's a lot of sales tax. And so a company like Intel pays very little income tax now for property taxes. We don't have a sales tax. So they pay very little in tax to the state of Oregon. Offering them more tax credits doesn't really accomplish much because they're already not paying taxes.
Well, I think that that's a great point to end on. John, thank you so much for coming on Policy for the People.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for listening to Policy for the People. We will see you next time.
What's up, everybody? This is Goddess, and she, and you're tuning in to KBOO Portland. Holla at your girl.
Good morning, and welcome to Film at 11 here on your community radio, KBOO Portland. This week, Matthew of KBOO's monthly bedtime story program, Gremlin Time, takes a fresh look at House of Frankenstein, which groups Boris Karloff with Lon Chaney Jr., John Carradine, Lionel Atwill, and other horror stars of the time. And Jeff Godsell revisits the controversial 90s Oscar winner, American Beauty. But first, a whirlwind tour of some recent movies and TV shows. Actors, it turns out, can be genres. And one of the best is the